Okay, well, welcome everybody. This is Richard Clem. I'm coming to you live this evening from St. Paul, Minnesota. Today is November 28th, 2017, and we're going to talk for about 45 minutes tonight about Iowa trust accounts. This program, the live program, I have applied for CLE credit in Iowa as well as in Minnesota. The material I'm going to be covering tonight is Iowa specific. We're going to look at the specific rules governing trust accounts in the state of Iowa. However, much of the material, or perhaps even most of it, is equally applicable in other states. And I will kind of specify when I'm talking about general provisions that are applicable in most states versus provisions that are only applicable in the state of Iowa. I'll try to be specific about that. But again, the main focus is Iowa. And during the course of the program, I will be giving a series of code numbers. And whether you're listening to it live tonight or if you're listening to a later podcast, for CLE credit, please email the code numbers that you hear, and I will use that to record your attendance and send you a certificate of attendance. One thing that's particularly relevant that I want to point out, especially to the attorneys in Iowa who are taking the program live this evening on November 28th, and also attorneys who might be listening to this in November, is going to go a little bit off topic here just to make what is kind of an important announcement, is that effective December 25th, Christmas Day was picked as the effective date, Iowa attorneys have a kind of a new, very major requirement about a requirement to do succession planning for their law firm. So if you, hopefully if you're an Iowa attorney, you're already well aware of that, and you have those succession plans in place because you have only a few weeks to finish that. It most strongly impacts sole practitioners because you as a sole practitioner, where you don't have anybody else immediately in your firm, well, the Iowa Supreme Court is requiring you to make very specific plans about what will happen if in the event of your death or disability. And you need to designate another attorney in the state or another law firm to basically take over your practice. And you might even have to do some substantive estate planning as far as writing a will or modifying your will or in almost every case, preparing some kind of a durable power of attorney to that designee. That's way beyond the scope of what I'm going to talk about tonight. In another CLE, I'm maybe going to talk about it for about 10 minutes. If you notice that in the course materials for this evening's program, at the very end, that's mentioned, and then there's a link to the CLE materials for another program that I have planned, where I talk about it for about 10 minutes. I certainly don't go into much detail about it, but I do have links to other sources of information from the Iowa Supreme Court and from the Iowa Court Commissions. So again, if you are an Iowa attorney, I kind of implore you to look into that because it's kind of a major change that takes effect on December 25th, and you have to report the status of that succession planning, including the name of that designee. You need to report that as part of your March 1st affidavit. It's fairly extensive planning that needs to be done. It's not something that you can put off until the last minute. So again, I strongly encourage any Iowa attorneys listening to this to make sure that's taken care of. Kind of a big deal if you're a sole practitioner. Not quite as big a deal if you are practicing as part of a firm because you can designate the rest of your firm, basically, to take over for you. So it's a lot less difficult in the case of if you're practicing in a partnership or part of a larger firm. But especially for the sole practitioners, you have your work cut out for you on that. So I want to bring that to your attention. So anyway, that's kind of your bonus material. So we're actually going to run about 50 minutes tonight. But I did want to get that important announcement out there. Again, hopefully that's very old news to you by now, and you have that succession planning well underway if you're an Iowa attorney. But if you're not, again, please look at my course materials. At the very end, there's a link to some other course materials, and that has some link to some authoritative sources, some articles in the Iowa State Bar Association Journal, and a CLE put on by the Court Commission staff, and you'll definitely want to take a look at that. Well, in fact, there's even a link to the 29-page succession plan that you have to have completed by December 25th. So, again, you definitely want to take a look at that. But, again, tonight what we're going to be talking about is trust accounts. Pretty much, if you are practicing law in the state of Iowa or in any other state, you really need to have a trust account. We'll talk exactly what those requirements are, and we're going to spend 3 hours talking about it. Well, why are we spending that much time? Well, because it's an important topic, I added some cases here at the beginning of the materials just to remind us that it is an important topic, because the bad news is you can get in a lot of trouble for seemingly minor violations. The good news, on the other hand, is that most of the requirements that are imposed upon you are, even though, you know, minor requirements, are generally pretty specific things. So if you can follow the specific instructions, you're going to stay out of trouble. But on the other hand, you have the potential for getting in a lot of trouble for innocent violations just because you're not complying with the letter of the law. And as you can see from the Iowa cases I have cited there, it looks like the Iowa Supreme Court has a heart, and it's probably true of most other state Supreme Courts. And most of the violations we see that they look like we're looking at the attorney suffered either a reprimand or a short suspension of 30 days or whatever. But still, you don't want to get yourself reprimanded. You don't want to get yourself suspended for 30 days. So you want to be careful with this material, and to kind of emphasize kind of a worst case scenario, I cite the case here from Minnesota, actually from my home state, the case of attorney Randall Tighe. Now, those of you in Minnesota, when I mention that name, that's one of those attorney names that when I say it, it will kind of sound vaguely familiar. You've heard that name somewhere before because he was a fairly prominent Twin Cities attorney. It took me a little while to figure out who he was, but he was the attorney who, he would describe himself, I think you could properly describe him this way, as a crusader for the First Amendment. He was a prominent First Amendment attorney. And of course, if you're a prominent First Amendment attorney, that means that you represent a lot of dirty bookstores and adult businesses, and so that's kind of how his popular perception outside of the legal profession was. But in any event, he was a very good, very competent, as far as I know, very ethical attorney. But he was just not very good at keeping track of his trust account records. He wasn't. I think it's safe to say he probably wasn't very good with numbers. As you can see, the Minnesota Supreme Court, just like the Iowa Supreme Court in those other cases, did exercise a considerable amount of mercy in dealing with him. He would bounce a check from his trust account just as a result of negligence on his part, for a couple of dollars. And some of the violations were very de minimis. He bounced a check probably didn't even bounce, but I mean the trust account was overdrawn, just by a couple of dollars or something. I think the largest deficiency was something like $600. All of that was promptly cured, and no clients were harmed as a result of this. But he had a series of suspensions. You know, this happened and he got suspended one time. He got his license back. Well, the same thing happened again. He got suspended another time. And then finally, in this 2017 case that's cited here, I think it's safe to say that the Minnesota Supreme Court said enough was enough. And here they suspended him for 2 years, which is a pretty serious sanction. And again, the largest dollar amount really was a few hundred dollars. No clients were really harmed as a result of it. So you want to follow that example. You want to be careful and make sure that you don't wind up in that same situation, because if you're an honest, ethical, hardworking, competent attorney, you can still get yourself in trouble for these violations. And as I say here, all of those ethics cases that I have cited here could have been avoided if the attorneys had simply followed the rules. And let's see, I'm going to give us our first code number here of E162. E as in ethics, 162. E162. So write down E162, and at the conclusion of the program, either at the conclusion of one program or at the conclusion of all the programs, you can email that to me, and I can record your attendance. But again, your first code number is E162. As we turn to the first rule that we're going to look at, really the starting point when talking about trust accounts, and this rule is identical in Minnesota. So those of you taking it for Minnesota credit, when we see Rule 1.15, this is the ABA Model Code of Professional Responsibility, and it's identical in Iowa and Minnesota, as well as most other states, because most states have adopted this same rule. So probably on tonight's program, this first 45-minute segment, we'll be covering material that is pretty much identical in every state where you might be listening from. But Rule 1.15 basically says that you have to be careful when handling your client's property. The general rule is that you have to appropriately safeguard any property belonging to a client or to a third party that comes into your hands in connection with the practice of law, so that applies, not just to money, but any kind of tangible property that comes into your possession. Well, you have to appropriately safeguard it. And, of course, what's appropriate will vary depending on the circumstances. But when it comes to money, then the rules start getting much more specific. And the rule is kind of an absolute rule to which there are really no exceptions, is that any time money comes into your hands in connection with the practice of law that belongs to somebody other than you, in other words, money belonging to a client or money belonging to a third party, anytime that money comes into your hands, well, it has to stay out of your hands. It has to go in the trust account. It has to be kept separate from your property. Specifically, it has to be kept in a separate account, namely your trust account. And we'll talk a little bit later about whether that can be a commingled trust account or a pooled trust account with the rest of your clients, which is usually what we're talking about. But in some situations, it might be a separate account of which that client or third party is the beneficial owner. But that money has to go in a trust account of some kind, and we'll spend most of this program talking about the rules governing those trust accounts. Specifically, that money can never go into your account. So money belonging to a client has to always go in the trust account. It can never go in your personal account. It can never go in your business operating account. It can never be stored under your mattress or whatever. There's only one place where that money is allowed to be, and that is in a trust account of some kind. That's kind of a golden rule to which there are really no exceptions. that so if that's the one thing that you remember from tonight, that's the most important rule, that any time money not belonging to you comes into your hands in connection with the practice of law, that money has to be kept separately in the trust account. Rule 1.15 does impose some other requirements. First of all, you have to keep proper records, and we will talk at length about what those records are in a little while, or probably in our next session of this program. But you have to keep very detailed records of your trust accounts, and you have to preserve those records for 6 years. That's the rule, that you have to preserve those for 6 years. And keep in mind, of course, that those records are confidential, because under Rule 1.6, that information is client confidential, and it remains confidential even after they cease being clients. So you have to take care in where and how those records are stored. You can't, store them in the cloud with no password protection. You can't, store them in a box in your back porch. They have to be, you have to keep appropriate care of those, because they are client confidential information. And again, when we get to Iowa Court Rule 45, which is probably very similar to the rules in Minnesota, we'll talk about what those specific record keeping requirements are. But for now, it's safe to say simply that you do have to keep detailed records, and you have to keep them for 6 years. Now, again, that's kind of the golden rule, to which there is no exception, that client money always has to go in the trust account. The corollary to that rule is that your money can never go in your trust account. There can be no commingling. Your client money belongs one place, your personal money belongs another place, and nary the twain shall meet. Your personal money cannot be in the trust account. Well, remember that first rule I said there's really no exception to it, but there are two exceptions to cases where you can keep your money in the trust account, but they're very limited exceptions. First of all, the bank could very well charge service charges on your trust account, and those are your responsibility. Those are not the client's responsibility. So you can keep a certain amount of money in your trust account to cover reasonable bank service charges as they arise. And I think it's safe to say that $100 is a safe harbor number, a proper number that you can deposit into that account. You can keep $100 of your money in the trust account to cover bank service charges as they arise. I had one Iowa attorney tell me that he heard that $100 figure directly from somebody at the Iowa Court Commission, an auditor who had was in the process of auditing his trust accounts, and this auditor told him that $100 was the proper number. And other attorneys, both in Iowa and Minnesota that I've talked to, have also told me that that they feel $100 is an appropriate amount of money to keep in your account to cover bank service charges. Now, I've tried to pin down staff from the Iowa Court Commissions and whether, to give me an official pronouncement to say, well, is $100 the amount? And I guess understandably they've been reluctant to go out on a limb and say, yes, $100 is always the safe harbor. Because that's understandable, because, the situation could certainly vary. There could be situations where a different number would be appropriate. But I think it's safe to say that about $100 is the correct amount of your money to keep in the trust account to cover bank service charges. So that would cover a monthly service charge, if any, imposed by the bank. Or even if the bank does not impose monthly service charges, that would cover check printing or incidental charges that might arise in connection with. I think $100 is a reasonably safe amount of money to do that. Now, if $100 is good, well, then $1,000 is better, because what if I want to keep a cushion in my trust account? Well, no, you can't do that, because at that point you are commingling. Now, for your personal checking account, or for your office operating account, a perfectly reasonable strategy for you to do to avoid problems at the bank is to keep a cushion in your bank account. So you always keep $1,000 in your checking account. And then, kind of pretend that that's not there and kind of use that as a cushion so that, if you write a check to pay the gas bill, if you thought you had $200 in your account and you accidentally write a check for $201, well, normally that would result in an overdraft. But on the other hand, if you have a cushion in there, then it's not a problem, because then instead of your balance dipping down to negative $1, it actually dips down to $999, which is not a problem. So that's a perfectly good strategy for you to use in connection with your personal bank account, but that is simply not permitted in connection with your trust account. Because $1,000 is not a reasonable amount of money to cover bank service charges. $1,000 is in there for another purpose, namely to avoid, to serve as a cushion, to avoid overdrafts. But that is not permitted. A cushion is not permitted in your trust account. The only amount that you are allowed to keep in that account to cover of your own money is approximately $100 to cover bank service charges. So be careful with that. Don't have a cushion. And also you have to keep in mind that if the bank is imposing service charges, say there's a $20 a month service charge, well, then you really ought to make that $20 deposit every month. So when your $100 dips down to $80, probably a good idea to deposit an amount to cover that bank service charge immediately, or certainly do it after a couple of months, because if 6 months goes by, then you've amassed $120 in service charges, and your $100 does not cover that. Now, one thing where the Iowa Court Commissions have gone out on a limb and said it is okay to do is, well, what if your bank has a minimum balance requirement in order to avoid monthly service charges? With some business accounts, the bank might say, well, there's a $20 a month service charge unless you maintain a minimum balance of $500. They have stated officially, and I have a link to it. Well, I'm not sure if it's official, but it's at least written material from them that they are okay with you keeping a deposit in there to maintain a minimum balance to avoid a service charge. So if you are in that situation and the bank has, for example, a $500 minimum balance in order to avoid monthly service charges, then you are okay depositing $500 into your account rather than $100 because they have deemed that to be a reasonable purpose. But again, you are not allowed to merely keep a cushion in there. It has to be for the specifically a reasonable amount for the purpose of either covering service charges or, as they have stated, avoiding service charges as they come along. And I included a little bit of material in here just to remind you that you ought to thank your banker occasionally for if they do not charge a service charge. Because based upon the survey, or the very informal survey I've taken in the past just from a show of hands, it seems like about half of the banks in the state of Iowa waive the service charge in connection with lawyer trust accounts. because they realize that you're going to, they're not trying to make money on that. They realize that you're going to bring other business to the bank, and they'll make their money on that. So it seems about half or maybe more than half of the banks in Iowa waive the service charge on trust accounts. And if your bank does that, you should be very grateful to your bank for doing that, because it does save you a lot of accounting problems, having to worry about it. Again, if they do charge a bank service charge, if it's $15.82 this month and $20.79 next month, that really means that on a monthly basis, or at least an almost monthly basis, you should be making a deposit to cover that service charge, to keep your personal balance in there at about $100. And that's a lot of extra work. And if you ever forget, and frankly, I suspect there are some attorneys in just about any state who would forget that. Eventually, if you forget it enough times, you're going to have an overdraft in your trust account, which is one thing you never want to have happen. So thank your banker both on your behalf, but also on behalf of the Client Security Commission, because if the bank started exercising their right to charge service charges, they could pretty much deprive the state of Iowa of that the revenue that we'll be talking about actually later. So again, you can have about $100 in there to cover bank service charges, but keep an eye on that, especially if the bank does charge a service charge, talk to your friendly banker about maybe they should waive that, make you a lot happier customer, and it would make the state of Iowa would also be grateful to them for doing that. So that's one exception. You can cover you can put that money in there to cover reasonable bank service charges, or to avoid them. And then the other exception, when your money is allowed to be in the trust account, is money belonging to you and the client jointly. So in other words, what they're really talking about is that settlement check that you received in the personal injury case. You settled this civil case for $9,000, and you got a check from the insurance company for $9,000. That check belongs to you and the client jointly. In fact, it's probably made out to in both of your names with the word "and" between it. That money belongs to you jointly, so that's deposited in the trust account. And as we'll talk about later, that has to be dispersed promptly. We'll go into a lot more detail about that. So again, the main takeaway from Rule 1.15 is that money belonging to the client always goes in the trust account, always, always, always. Money belonging to you never goes in the trust account, subject to those limited exceptions. Another rule that we'll go into a lot more detail when we get to Rule 45 is 1.15C, which states that you shall deposit in your trust account legal fees that have been paid in advance. In general, any time that you receive money from a client for work that you're going to do in the future, the general rule is that goes in your trust account, because you have not actually done the work. You have not actually earned it. That rule can be turned around in certain situations. There can be some situations where you get the money before you do the work, but you have to scrupulously comply with the requirements in those situations when you do that. So in general, and again, in a later part of the program, we'll go into more detail of when you can take that money out. But the general rule is, if you get money from a client before you've done the work, it goes in the trust account, and unless you can fit it within one of those exceptions. So we'll talk about those exceptions later. You have to promptly notify the client or third party. The Iowa Court Commissions have kind of taken the view that when it says promptly here, well, they're talking about the same day. So anytime you receive money on behalf of a client, and you make a deposit in your trust account, you really have to send the notification to the client the same day to be on the, or at least to err on the side of caution. You want to do that the same day. Also, and they are a little bit more specific about this, when payments are made, when disbursements are made, rather, when you take the client's money out of the trust account to either pay to yourself or to pay to a third party, that you also have to notify them of that. You have to notify the client of that the same day. So you can't delay those notifications. Now, I think it's okay if you mail it to them that day. You know, they don't have to receive it. But any time there's a transaction in your trust account, either a deposit or a withdrawal, that generally means that you have to send a notification of that transaction to your client the same day. If two people claim interest, if there's a dispute, you know, you're holding money that you don't know if it belongs to client A or client B, well, then paragraph E of the rule says that that has to be as the provisions for dealing with that dispute, and undisputed portions have to be paid out promptly. Kind of the extreme case of that, and again, we'll go into more detail of it when we get to the more detailed Rule 45, is that if you have a dispute with your client, that money has to be the portion about which there is no dispute must be paid out promptly. Actually, that's part of the comments here that we'll talk about in a little bit more detail here just in a few minutes. So again, that is Rule 1.15, and so far everything we've covered up until now, most of these comments as well, these are equally applicable if you're in Minnesota or some other state, because the rule is identical. You have to hold the property of others. Looking at the comments now, you have to hold any kind of property you're holding with due care, and the status you are in the status of a professional fiduciary. One thing it points out in this rule is that things like securities or valuable documents or valuable property should generally be kept in a safe deposit box. Now, the question comes up, and Iowa does not have a real specific answer to this, but again, I think it would kind of err on the side of caution. Iowa does not have a specific rule. Does that have to be a separate trust account safe deposit box, or can you put material in your own personal safe deposit box? Depending on the circumstances, it would vary a little bit. If you were in Wisconsin, I would say no, it cannot be in your personal safe deposit box, because the Wisconsin version of Rule 1.15 is very specific and says that that it can't be in your personal safe deposit box at the bank. It has to be a separate safe deposit box with the words trust account, printed on it or whatever, or at least figuratively. So Iowa and Minnesota do not specifically have that requirement. But on the other hand, I would err on the side of caution and say don't put it in your personal safe deposit box, because that's kind of a version of commingling. You know, I put my client's assets in the same box as my personal assets. Well, that's kind of the definition of commingling. If in an extreme situation, I guess you have to do that because, you know, you have to guard these assets and you don't have any other safe deposit box, certainly you have to label them clearly. Put the document, in fact, Rule 1.15 does say that they have to be labeled and segregated. You should put it in an envelope with the client's name on it. So that there's no question as to that this envelope belongs to the client and the other envelopes in this box belong to the attorney. But again, if it is something that you do on a regular basis, even if it's not something you do on a regular basis and you have the opportunity to do it, I would say that you should have a separate safe deposit box for client assets as opposed to your personal assets, although again the Iowa version of the rule is a little bit open. Now, do you need to have more than one trust account? Probably not. But there are two situations, and we'll get into more detail about exactly what your pooled office trust account is. We'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. But I'm just flipping my written materials here, make sure I'm on the same page as everybody. Do you need more than one trust account? Well, probably not. As we will talk in a little bit more detail, most of the times, most attorneys, certainly in all the years I've practiced law, I've only had one trust account, which is my pooled trust account. And again, we'll talk about it, or my IOLTA account, or my LTAB account, as we call them in Minnesota. That's probably the only trust account you ever need. But there might be some situations where you need a separate trust account. And one of those would be large amounts of money belonging to a particular client. And we'll talk about that in more detail in one of the other sessions. But for most of the practice of law, you just need one trust account. Another situation where conceivably would be necessary would be if you practice law in two different states with conflicting rules. Now, we probably won't see any conflicting rules between Iowa and most other states, but there might be a situation where Iowa imposes one very specific requirement and some other state imposes a completely different requirement. The last rule in the Rules of Professional Conduct, which I think is 8.7, covers the conflict of laws provision, and I think those situations could be resolved there. But possibly there might be some situations where your Iowa trust account does not comply with the requirements in some other state, or that other state's trust account doesn't comply with Iowa requirements. The biggest one being if you're an Iowa attorney, the trust account has to be in a bank in Iowa. There might be a situation where you would need a separate trust account for a separate state. So if you do have practice that stretches across state lines, that is one item you want to keep in mind. And at this point, I'm going to give our next code number, and that will be, and as you've noticed, all of tonight's, all of them, this first 45-minute session will start with E1. And this one is E175, 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 E175 is our next code number for tonight's program. Let's see. Look, getting back to the comments here, commingling and money to cover service charges, we already covered that in great detail, so we've already talked about comment number two. Comment number three, we'll go into a little bit more detail later, or we're going to go into a lot more detail later on about, but basically the rule is that anytime you receive money for work you have not done, the general rule or kind of the default position is that money needs to go into your trust account unless you scrupulously comply with those other requirements. For example, a lien? There could be situations where money is in the trust account and some law external to the law governing attorney ethics says that money belongs to a third party. So, for example, you become aware that a medical provider has a lien on some of the money from the personal injury settlement. To the extent that those liens, those claims are properly presented to you, that's kind of an exception to the rule that you always have to give the client their money because you've been properly legally notified of this lien. You have that obligation to make sure that lien is satisfied, this paragraph four here, paragraph E of the rule, basically says that your pre-existing legal duty to satisfy that lien takes precedence over the fact that you just have to pay the money to the client. Although, then again, if there's a dispute, if the client says, no, I don't want you to satisfy that lien, well, then that at that point it becomes a dispute, and that disputed portion of the money in your trust account has to be segregated and dealt with, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about those disputes in a little while. Now, comment five here raises an interesting point because I know many of you probably do not practice law on a regular basis. Or maybe in addition to practicing law, you are engaged in some other business activity where you come into possession of other people's money. Even if you don't practice law, well, you might be in doing some job where you are handling other people's money. Well, the question arises then, do the trust account rules apply to you? And I think this comment number five here says that the rules in this rule are independent of the rules, if you're an escrow agent or if you're doing something else. But the thing to use some caution about is you want to be aware of Rule 5.7. Of the Minnesota and Iowa Rules of Professional Conduct, because that rule says that if you are doing something that is arguably connected with the practice of law, so in other words, you're an escrow agent as part of the practice of law, well, as long as the activity you're engaging in is not distinct from the practice of law, then Rule 5.7 says that all of the rules governing attorneys, including Rule 1.15, apply to you. So in other words, there might be some business activity that you are engaging in that's ancillary to the practice of law. Well, because you are doing that as an attorney, well, then that means that Rule 1.15 applies to you. And you come into possession of this money, well, the money has to be treated pursuant to Rule 1.15, meaning it has to go in a trust account. Whereas there might be non-attorneys engaging in this same business activity, and they are not bound by this rule, so they don't have to put it in their trust account. They can commingle it, they can put it under their mattress, they can do whatever they want with it. Well, Rule 5.7 says that in those situations where something is arguably the practice of law or arguably not the practice of law, it says that as long as it is not distinct from your provision of legal services, then Rule 1.15 still applies. So you have to watch out for that. If you are working in some kind of business where you don't have your coworkers don't even know that you're a lawyer, but you handle funds for some other reason, well, then I think it would be safe to say that the work that you are doing is distinct from the practice of law, and just because you have money in your hands, it probably doesn't have to go into a trust account, as long as that's otherwise permissible under the rules of whatever other business you're engaging in. But you do have to be careful because you have to look carefully at Rule 5.7. So if you are engaged in some kind of business activity where money comes into your hands that belongs to somebody other than you, well, you want to look carefully at Rule 5.7 because Rule 5.7 says in some situations that might still constitute the practice of law. And again, if you're working for the widget factory and they don't even tell people that you're a lawyer, well then I think it's pretty safe to say that that's distinct from the practice of law. But on the other hand, if you are practicing law and engaging in some other business activity, then I think an argument could be made that many of your activities are not distinct from the practice of law. So you as a lawyer engaging in that activity have one set of responsibilities, whereas a non-lawyer who is perhaps legally engaging in the same activity might have some very different obligations. We started about 7:05, so we have about six more minutes. We'll go on a little bit more. And we will, well, I guess I'll skip over this comment number six right now, because when we get to more of the mechanics of how the trust account system in Iowa, which I know is similar to the one in Minnesota, when we get to the mechanics of how it works, we'll go into a lot more detail. But as you're probably aware, Iowa, Minnesota, and most other states have what's called an IOLTA program, Interest on Lawyers Trust Accounts. And under the IOLTA program, the interest in these trust accounts is swept up and sent to the state. I believe in Iowa it's called the Client Security Commission. In Minnesota it's called the Lawyers Trust Account Board. And those states use that interest money for a number of activities. In Minnesota, I think it's exclusively used to fund the Client Security Board, which basically uses the money to reimburse victims of dishonest attorneys. In Iowa, it's used for that purpose, and I think for some other kind of pro bono types of activities. That you can find at their website, this note number six on Rule 1.15 just serves as a reminder of that. Well, I guess I'll spend the next 4 minutes just kind of giving an introduction to Iowa Court Rule Chapter 45, which covers client trust accounts. Now, up until now, everything I've said this evening is equally applicable in Minnesota, Iowa, and probably over 40 other states. So whatever state you're taking the program in, it's safe to say that everything I've said up until this point applies to you, even if you are not in Iowa. Now, at this point in the program, we do get to the Iowa-specific material, and we are going to be just about everything I'm going to say after this point is specific to the state of Iowa. Although, I'm not going to delve into any divergence, but the rules I'm about to talk about are very, very similar in Minnesota as well. So you needn't worry too much about wasting your time listening to this program. You'll want to look at the Minnesota specific rules, which are actually found on the Minnesota Board of Lawyers Professional Conduct website. There's a document there called Appendix A, which contains all these rules, and you'll want to take a look at that. But in general, they're going to be very similar to these. I should point out that those rules do have a tendency to change from time to time. So if you're in Minnesota, you'll want to read that Appendix A, maybe on an annual basis. You'll want to take a look at Chapter 45 of the Iowa Court Rules. Rule 45 and similar provisions in Minnesota say that some lawyers have to have trust accounts. And specifically, the rule says that any time you receive money from a client or a third party, as long as you're getting that money in connection with something arising out of the practice of law in Iowa, you have to deposit that in your trust account. So I think the oversimplified version of that is that if you're in Iowa and you're engaged in the private practice of law, you really should have a trust account, because even though you do not routinely receive client funds today, you could very well in the future. So that when that day comes when you're holding this check, kind of like a hot potato, you need to be able to do something with it, and you probably want to have that trust account set up in advance. At this point, I'm going to talk for a couple more minutes, but I'm going to give our last code number of the evening. The last code number of the evening is E151, E151, E151 is our final code number. So I think there we are going to conclude for the evening. Tomorrow we'll start looking at these specific rules under Iowa Court Rule Chapter 45. The specific client trust account rules. And at this point, I am going to just stop our recording. I'll be back in just 1 second.